I'll read our first pericope, Luke chapter 14, 25 through 33. It's from the New International Version. It is the Revised Common Lectionary passage for Proper 18 in Ordinary Time on September the 4th. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, 'This person began to build and wasn't able to finish.' Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples." Now, Rex, Jesus here has a very interesting way of recruiting disciples by telling them the ways they cannot be his disciple. What do you make of this high calling Jesus gives us as disciples?
It's very different from how our leaders would recruit people to follow them. Whereas here, if Jesus is recruiting people and he's laying down all these qualifications or criteria, the immediate response of people, maybe perhaps people who are reading this now, they're like, "Man, he's making it really difficult for me to follow him, especially when he says, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate.'" And a lot of people would need to understand why it was worded that way. And when it says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife, children," it's like, hate everybody, including yourself. But we can understand that this is not about your emotion. It's about your attitude. It's about your mode of action toward the people you care most about. It doesn't mean that you hate them. We read in Matthew 10:37, soften that line. And for us, we understand it now as to love them less. That Jesus is your number one priority. Of course, you love your parents, your brothers, your family, but that relationship, all of the relationships we have, they take second priority. Jesus is going to be our all in all. And this is a very challenging criteria because, come to think of it, many times we are torn between what we need to take care of, our priorities, our plans, our goals. But Jesus Christ here is telling us that we need to make that choice. We need to make that commitment that part of it is counting the cost, and it cost that much to follow Jesus. Remember here, large crowds were following him. And then Jesus turned around and said, "Hey, if anyone wants to follow me, do this. Or unless you do this, you cannot be my disciple." And I'm just wondering, how did they react? You're making it more difficult for us to follow you. But for now, we can understand that when we consider being a follower of Jesus, we really need to count the cost. What are we doing? What are we going to prioritize? What are the things in our lives that we need to sacrifice or to let go?
It's interesting to me, Rex, that, as we think about this passage Christologically, Christ-centered, Jesus is never asking us to do something that we don't see inherent in him.
In other words,
in his own journey on earth, we see him doing these very things he's saying with his own family. Many of his own family members didn't believe him in terms of who he was, but he, in obedience to the Father, went to his death, even death on a cross. Yeah. And that had to be painful for his own family. But his priority was the Father's priorities for his life. And I think we see what he's saying in reality in Jesus, don't we?
Yeah. And whoever does not carry their cross, just like what you said, Jesus did not say these things as if, you know, it was something that he wasn't going to do.
Yes.
Well, he did. He carried that cross, and he's calling us to do the same. Mm. To consider the spiritual sacrifice. That it's like marriage, you know. You don't approach it haphazardly. You really think about it. What can I give? How can I really follow through with my commitments? What do I need to realign or reorder in my life or recenter in my life so that I can do this? And the example here of building a tower, estimating how much money it would cost to complete it, or even a king going to war. It's just us being mindfully aware of the cost, because we really need to understand that we need to count the cost in the light of who Jesus is as well. Mm-hmm. That he is the God who never gives up, despite all the challenges we may face, despite the discouragement we may face. We can count all those things, but we can be encouraged knowing that we are not alone, that Jesus Christ is the one who's leading us, who's taking care of us. He's our victory in all of these things. Mm-hmm. And that's why we cannot follow him on our own. He's the one who strengthens us. Who yes. is strengthening us to follow him and to even follow through in those commitments. Hmm.
You've mentioned counting the costs several times now. And I'm curious, we know that all scripture points to Jesus. He said so himself as he was walking with the brothers on the Emmaus Road. I'm curious, how can we interpret counting the cost in light of the God revealed in Jesus Christ?
If we can understand or even just reflect on what Jesus did, how much sacrifice he offered, so that we can totally understand the depth of his love. And his sacrifices would always point to us that the victory has been won for us. It's a done deal. We just need to appropriate in our lives all the things that have been promised for us, and walk with courage, that we're not doing this out of our own strength, that it's him, it's Jesus Christ sustaining us. We count the cost. In other studies about this word, I heard a pastor said counting the cost would also mean bringing along our unlikeness, how far we are from the image of Jesus, bringing all of these things, our imperfections, all our brokenness, bring them all as we follow Jesus Christ. Because in the process of following, in the process of obeying and surrendering, we become transformed into his image.
Yeah. Bring our whole self, right? That is what courage yes. is, wholeheartedness, our yes. whole self. So as I think about this pericope, Rex, you know, following Jesus is walking as he walks by the Spirit. And sometimes we call that discipleship. And I'm just curious, as you exegete this passage, what really is discipleship about?
For me, discipleship is about following Jesus. It's about surrendering our relationships to him. Discipleship means giving up anything that takes precedence over Jesus Christ in my life. That means anything that gives me identity or security, because he is to be my all in all. Mm. But you know, this is not predicated upon my ability to do all these things. But I'm reminded of Philippians 1:6. It's the deeper realization that Jesus has already started the work in us, and he will be faithful to complete it. It's about walking, a daily walk with Jesus, asking Jesus, what do you want me to do today? Or where do you want me to join you? What are you telling me today? What do I need to surrender to you now? What do I have to give? And it's a real intimate relationship with Jesus Christ. And it's not discipleship. Sometimes people get a little triggered by the word discipleship, because it can mean for many people like a very structured program. It's about following Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's about knowing Him. It's about experiencing Him. It's about, you know, when we pastors say, you know, the Lord loves you, that for us, when we say that, that is an experiential reality for us rather than a theological concept. So, yeah, it's a daily walk that, Jesus, lead me today. Where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do? Use me in according to your divine pleasure. Use me today. Make me a vessel, whatever you can do.
There is a big gap, is there not, between knowing about Jesus and knowing Jesus relationally. And we think about the triune persons, Father, Son, and Spirit. They're persons as in they're personal. So, of course, the walk is going to be personal, is it not? And I appreciated what you said. Sometimes we can be so structured.
Yeah.
And structure matters, don't get me wrong, but we can be so structured that it almost squeezes the life out of just walking with Him in the cool of the evening, you know, hearkening back to Genesis and just talking with the Lord in that way. So, yeah, that's good. Thank you, Rex.